First, you used to have to stand in line to buy tickets to see your favorite band or team play, but now buying tickets is much more convenient, with most of these sales happening online. But why do some tickets sell out so fast and then appear later on third-party ticket broker websites for a lot more money sometimes than the original price? Eric Budish joins us now. He's a professor of economics at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. He's here to shed some light on the messy world of the live event ticket market. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thanks.
What got you, as an economist, interested in how tickets, event tickets, are priced? Why was this a problem that you thought was intriguing?
Oh, that's a fun question. So it's a market that's been screwed up for a long time, and it's a market that's associated with a lot of what economists call rent-seeking, so socially wasteful behavior. In this case, I got interested in it in part because my brother was doing some reselling of New York Giants football tickets. he was in college at the time. I was like, oh, geez, if even college kids are spending their time trying to buy tickets on the primary market and then resell them on eBay and StubHub, something about this market screwed up. And I work in an area of research called market design, which works on getting the rules of marketplaces right in the first place, so that then behavior by participants in the market leads to good allocation, socially efficient allocation.
Now, let me see if I have this right. A lot of people will look at the price of a concert, say, especially a big famous legacy band like, I don't know, the Eagles or something like that, or a sports event, and say, well, clearly the problem is ticket prices are too high. You say, no, they're actually too low.
Well, so I'll say two things, actually. So one is, I think there's a market clearing price, oftentimes in for popular acts, you know, like the Eagles or Taylor Swift and Bruce Springsteen are doing big tours at the moment. The market clearing price, the price at which demand meets supply, is quite high, sometimes offensively high. Then there's another price, which is the price an artist might want to sell their tickets to their fans, because they think that that price is fair in some meaningful sense. And I think my main point as an economist is, well, let's say the market clearing price for Bruce Springsteen tickets is $1,000 a ticket, and Bruce Springsteen would like to sell the tickets to his fans for $100 a ticket. From my perspective, if you set the price at $1,000, that clears the market. That's one sensible price to sell at. If he wants to sell his tickets to his fans at $100, I think that's also a reasonable thing for an artist to want to do. But what I think is diluted and what defies economic gravity is to sell tickets at $100 and then assume that they won't get scooped up by ticket brokers, ticket bots, and then resold on eBay and StubHub for $1,000.
That's where it gets tricky, because in that example you just gave, between the price tickets are actually selling at and the price somebody's willing to pay for them, there's $900 of profit that somebody could make. It's a kind of an open invitation for somebody to grab that $900, right?
Absolutely. And laws of economic gravity, someone, there's going to be competition to get that free money. And that has led to ticket bots. It leads to college kids in dorm rooms clicking the button on Ticketmaster. But it's not going that to get that $900 of surplus into the pockets of your fans, you have to redesign how the market works and shut down resale. So I think that the two choices for this market that reflect economic reality are either to set a market clearing price, so $1,000 in my example, or to set a below market price but take measures to ensure that those tickets make it into the hands of your fans and can't be profitably resold. Because if they can be profitably resold, economic gravity says they're going to get scooped up by brokers, not by fans.
So let's look at the possible downsides of each of those. First of all, if you're a musician whose appeal is sort of your working class roots, like, say, Bruce Springsteen, a four-digit ticket price hurts your brand. It has an impact maybe on your other economic interests, right?
Yeah, it's not a good look. I completely agree. Taylor Swift's getting a lot of grief at the moment right now because she's trying to set market clearing prices for her tickets, and she seems to have overshot. And it's also not a good look there, too.
We're talking about live event ticket prices with economist Eric Budish from the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. So, Eric, that takes us to the other side. If I buy a ticket to Concert X, there's some sort of mechanism that says, Rob, you can't sell this ticket. You can't resell it, or at least you can't make money off of it. What are some of the methods that could be used or have been used to do that?
It's done very infrequently at the moment, but every time you take a plane, you can't resell your plane ticket at a profit. Right? Your name's on the ticket. You have to show your driver's license when you get to the airport. So we have other contexts in which there are rules in the market that allow, in that case, mandate, but either mandate or allow the shutdown of the resale market. So in concerts, there have been a few cases where artists have effectively done the same thing, require you to show your driver's license at the door or present the credit card you used to originally buy the ticket. And that makes it difficult, not quite impossible, but pretty difficult to buy low and then sell high. And I think that kind of mechanism is valuable for the market. If an artist wants to sell tickets at a below market price to their fans, they can do so if they shut down the aftermarket.
That sounds easier said than done in some ways, right? The way the tickets are sold now, if I want to buy them at a low price and sell lots of them, it's first come, first serve. I can buy a whole bunch of tickets. So yeah. How do you stop that?
Yeah. So if they're,
I guess if I have to buy them all in my name, I get it.
Economic gravity is if you can buy low and resell high, people are going to try to find a way to do that. And it used to be that the way to do that was to wait in the line, wait in a physical queue. Now you can do it with a computer. So the barriers to doing it are a lot lower. You have a lot more economies of scale, if you will, in the scooping up of underpriced tickets. So if you want to shut down that behavior, you have to ban resale. And I don't think this is a regulation necessarily. I think it's more. I would like resale bans to be an option for artists or sports teams. There's actually a whole lobbying organization called the Fan Freedom Coalition that exists to lobby against allowing resale bans. The Fan Freedom Coalition, which I think originally got funded by eBay and StubHub.
Who make money in part from resale of tickets.
Make a lot of money from reselling tickets. It lobbied to make it illegal for an artist or a stadium to ban a resale, because fans should have the freedom to resell their tickets.
Now, a problem I think I've seen you talk about elsewhere is, okay, I laid out $100 or whatever for a ticket, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, what if I get the flu? What if something comes up at work or family or whatever? I can't go to the concert. Well, worst comes to worst, I can dump off my ticket, make a little money back on it. There's a resale ban. I can't do that.
I think that's a hard issue with a resale ban. I think you'd have to design it in a way that you could get your money back potentially with some kind of cancellation fee from the venue or from the artist. And somewhat analogously to plane tickets, if you buy a plane ticket and you can't take the trip, you can get some of your money back, but you often pay a an economically significant cancellation fee. And that's the airline's way of ensuring that you were serious in the first place. And it's not like airlines are the most sympathetic creatures in our economy, but in this case, I think they're closer to a good design than the concert ticket industry is.
I think there's a feeling of justice involved at the root here. When people are paying money to see a concert, okay, if the money's going to the performer I like, okay, I'm okay with that, and their crew and the people who are doing work at the venue. If it's going to the college kid who fired up their computer bright and early, we don't like that. Is there an economic justice angle to this as we look at who the money's going to when we buy a ticket?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's exactly the way economists—let me put some language around what you just said, which is the way economists think about the issue, which is the money could go to the artist. So what's useful about that is that's a reward for artistic creation. That's a reward for innovation, for entrepreneurship. We have lots of ways in the economy we reward creation of new stuff that people like. So that economists like that, if the reward goes to the fans, it's not wasteful. It's generous of an artist to sell something that's in, quote-unquote, worth $500 to their fans for $100. And as you said, that might pay them back in other ways long-term with their brand or with record sales or with just general goodwill from their fans. And the thing that's just wasteful and that leads to wasteful activity is for that profit to get to go to brokers, because the phrase economist uses rent seeking. If you have $400 free dollars on the table, a lot of college kids are going to spend a lot of time, or really a lot of ticket brokers are going to spend a lot of money building bots competing for that $400. And a lot of that profit then gets dissipated in socially wasteful activity. My advisor liked to tell a story. Imagine there was a blimp leaking money onto Soldier Field. It was leaking $1 billion a year onto Soldier Field. At first, if you happened to be near Soldier Field and there was this blimp leaking $1 billion, oh, lucky you, you can catch some free money. But if that's happening consistently, then a lot of people are going to spend a lot of money building very sophisticated drones to try to catch the money that's leaking out of this blimp onto Soldier Field. And you're going to spew this cottage industry of money catchers. And from a perspective of the economy, it's kind of wasteful. So you see socially wasteful activity in pursuit of profits in lots of different contexts where markets are misdesigned. And the phrase economists use for that activity is rent seeking.
We'll leave it there for now, Eric. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. This is a lot of fun.
That was Eric Budish, professor of economics at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. We've been talking about the complex economy of live event ticketing.